Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tonight's the night that huge numbers of Americans have been waiting for, when Alaska's governor and Delaware's senator face off in their first and last vice presidential debate in St. Louis. Love him or not, Joe Biden's been around a long time. Sarah Palin joked she watched his speeches in second grade. But the Alaska governor is new to the national stage. Her debut was a shot in the arm for John McCain. 1 month in, not so clear. Some bad moments, but she's a fighter. This hour on Point, we're talking about Sarah Palin on debate day, 1 month into her national political career. You can join the conversation. Have you seen her on the stump? On the spot with Katie Couric? How do you judge Sarah Palin? Joining me first today from Great Falls, Virginia, is Mona Charon, syndicated conservative columnist, author of Do-Gooders. Mona Charon, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
So, Sarah Palin put on big display in St. Paul at the Republican convention, then in many ways locked away for much of this last month, out for a couple of three interviews with Charlie Gibson, Sean Hannity, Katie Couric. And now some conservative columnists saying not ready for prime time, others saying go get him, Sarah. How do you see it, Mona?
Well, I think that she was very, very badly handled. I agree with those who say that the McCain campaign got very, very cold feet and decided that that they should lock her up and just prep her and fill her brain with all kinds of facts. You know, as somebody who's done some public speaking myself, I can tell you that the less you do, the more nervous you get, and the more frequently you're out there interacting with audiences and just doing what comes naturally, well, certainly for a politician like her, the more comfortable and the better she will be. So tonight is the big night, and whether she can, if she rises above all of the tension, and if she is able to transcend that tonight, She will succeed, and she will be a leading figure in the Republican Party. And if not, then we will look back on this episode as a mistake of the McCain campaign.
Let's hear from a reporter who's been looking at Sarah Palin's background, at previous political battles she's been in the middle of. With us from Washington is Stephen Braun, national political reporter for the Los Angeles Times, recently spent 2 weeks in Alaska reporting on Governor Palin's record as a politician and campaigner there. Steve Braun, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate to be glad to be here.
It's good to have you. It's been rough going in recent days. CBS and Katie Couric keep dribbling out bits of this interview that clearly went extremely badly, where her answers are disjointed, look kind of disingenuous sometimes. But you've been up talking with people who have debated and confronted her on the campaign trail. And what I read you saying is, Steve, that she can be awfully tough.
Well, essentially, what I was told in Alaska was that potentially we could see one of two Sarah Palins at this debate, either the unprepared, overly prepped, somewhat at-sea character that we've seen in the interviews with Katie Couric and to a lesser degree with Charlie Gibson, or we could see someone who is fairly confident, breezes her way through, and even turns in the shiv on her opponents with a bright smile, and ends up doing quite well as she did in several of the debates in Alaska.
Mona, Steve, let's listen to a couple of examples of Palin in public, back to back. One when things were going great, another not so great. First, here she is at her national political debut at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul a month ago. She made her mission as vice president clear.
Flash for those reporters and commentators. I'm not going to Washington to seek their good opinion. I'm going to Washington to serve the people of this great country.
All right. And then she sat down with Katie Couric, and we've seen the questions about her foreign policy expertise, about McCain's examples of his reforming background, seen her kind of twisting in the wind. CBS News has been putting these side by side. Same question, or basically, to Joe Biden and to Sarah Palin. This is a minute and a half long, but let's listen to Katie Couric with first Biden, then Palin.
Are there Supreme Court decisions you disagree with?
You know, I'm the guy that wrote the Violence Against Women Act. And I said that every woman in America, if they are beaten and abused by a man, should be able to take that person to court, and meaning you should be able to go to federal court and sue in federal court the man who abused you, if you can prove that abuse. But they said no. That a woman, there was no federal jurisdiction. And they acknowledged I held about 1,000 hours of hearings proving that there's an effect on interstate commerce. Women who are abused and beaten are women who are not able to be in the workforce. And the Supreme Court said, well, there is an impact on commerce, but this is federalizing a private crime, and we're not going to allow it. I think the Supreme Court was wrong about that decision.
What other Supreme Court decisions do you disagree with?
Well, let's see. There's, of course, in the great history of America, there have been rulings that there's never going to be absolute consensus by every American. And there are those issues, again, like Roe v. Wade, where I believe are best held on a state level and addressed there. So, you know, going through the history of America, there would be others. But
can you think of any?
Well, I would think of any, again, that could best be dealt with on a more local level. Maybe I would take issue with, but, you know, as a mayor and then as a governor and even as a vice president, if I'm so privileged to serve, wouldn't be in a position of changing those things, but in supporting the law of the land as it reads today.
Sarah Palin with Katie Couric. Mona Charon, what the heck? I mean, what are we, you know, well, let's be generous. You know, lots of people aren't accustomed to sitting down with a national news anchor, but this would be the next vice president. Who knows? Maybe president. Is that all right in some way, anyway, Mona?
No, that wasn't all right. I think by now she has probably been told and figured out for herself that, in a situation where she can't think of something, it's okay to say, you know, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but there, you know, I don't remember the titles, but there have been any number of times over the last 15 years when I've picked up the newspaper and seen a Supreme Court ruling and thought, oh, I really wouldn't have done that. And that would have been sufficient. A lot of people would have said, you know, me too. I don't remember the names, but boy, they often do things I disagree with. But instead, she felt so trapped, and she thought, oh, they've got me. I can't remember the names. And so then she seems to start filling in empty words just to make the time go by. That's not a good strategy.
That piece, anybody could get stumped, but that kind of disingenuousness of attempting to appear to be answering something when you clearly don't know what you're saying at all. There's a kind of, there seems something wrong with that to me, with the instinct in that. Or do you think it was just the Klieg lights?
I think it was just nerves, but clearly it's something that she has to get over. And I expect that she will. I think that they have probably gone over this tape in Sedona at the ranch where she was preparing for this debate, and I'm sure that she regrets it. And I do think that fundamentally she's a bright gal and an accomplished woman, and she will correct her mistakes. I think she will. You will not see that sort of thing again.
Steve Braun, is the debate format better for Sarah Palin? You talked with people that she's gone up against in Alaska. Andrew Halcrow, a businessman who ran as an independent candidate against Palin, he said, when you try to prove she doesn't know anything, you lose because audiences are enraptured by her, and her biting comments give you a sense of how competitive she is. Anybody who doesn't take her seriously does so at their peril. Doesn't sound very threatening in the Couric interview, but maybe there's another face here, Steve.
Well, yeah, it largely depends on essentially the toughness of the questions and her own inner sense of self-confidence. She was able to glide by largely in Alaska because she wasn't forced either by the moderators. She was forced to a degree by her opponents. I mean, in essence, she wasn't pressed very hard to know a whole sea of different issues. And on the issues that she felt comfortable with, she was fairly fluent and quite at ease. I mean, the big question that she's got here is, in terms of her prepping, at least in Alaska, She at best would get half an hour preps here and there, largely on Alaska issues, a number of which she was fairly conversant in. But, you know, essentially since she's been named vice president, she's been, from what we're all we're hearing, has been giving these endless prepping sessions, and her head has just got to be swimming with facts and figures and issues, and it's no small wonder that you know, when she actually has you know, it's time for her to deliver. You know, where do you choose from? Where do you start? So the big question is now is with this the debate coming up tonight, is she going to walk out the confident Sarah Palin that that Alaskans saw in at least the several major TV debates, or are we going to see another one, the Katie Couric interview Palin step out, who's unsure of herself and is almost frozen by all of the prepping that she's had.
Mona, some conservative columnists, Kathleen Parker, or who we may hear from in just a moment, are already ready to push the dump button. Say we've seen enough. George Will's been very critical. David Brooks very critical. David Frum said, I think she has pretty thoroughly and probably irretrievably proven that she is not up to the job of being president of the United States. And, of course, he's a former speechwriter for President Bush. Is your hand near that dump button or anywhere near it, or are you prepared to just hang in and appreciate this big crowd she brings out, Mona?
Well, you know, my view is that it's not helpful to push the dump button. I don't think that's a realistic option in this world. McCain picked her. She has many strengths. She has also demonstrated certain weaknesses. What we have to hope for now is that those of us who would like to see a McCain victory, which I unabashedly do, you know, have to hope that she will be able to draw upon her inner resources and show some of the strengths that we know are in evidence and fewer of the weaknesses. I really think that when you say she ought to...
Mona, hold the thought. We're right up against the clock here. We'll come right back. We're talking about Governor Sarah Palin. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Sarah Palin, Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska, on debate day, 1 month into her national political career. What we've seen and heard so far. We've been joined by Steve Brown, a national political reporter for the LA Times, who's been up in Alaska looking at her political work and life there. Mona Charon has been with us, syndicated conservative columnist, author of Do-Gooders. And right now from Washington, we're joined by Kathleen Parker, syndicated columnist for the Tribune newspapers, author of Save the Males, conservative columnist who came out on September 26th with a call for Palin to step aside, saying she's out of her league. Kathleen Parker, welcome.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. I know it's been a pretty rocky road since you wrote and published this column. You're writing in the Tribune in the last couple of days that you've had threats, including, well, I guess you'd have to call them death threats since you made this call, Kathleen.
Yeah, I've gotten some pretty unfriendly mail, but I should mention that I've had this experience before from the far left. It's just a different feeling from this camp in particular, because when I say things that they agree with, you know, they want to hold parades and erect buildings and name them after me. But when I express an opinion that doesn't suit them, then the reaction has been sort of surprisingly vicious, I have to say.
Well,
now, that's not all, not across the board. I've had plenty of really nice responses as well. But but I'm talking about 11,000 emails. Clearly, I'm not able to get through them all.
Let's keep cool heads here, then,
yeah,
and look at it dispassionately. You knew that there would be a big response, and yet you made this call anyway. Why, Kathleen? Why have you gone to this length?
Well, I do this. This is what I do. I always say exactly what I think, and I say it when I think it. I don't evaluate, gee, what's the political fallout going to be? Because I'm not a political operative, and I don't work for the GOP. I don't measure my words according to whether it will, you know, make my day better.
So tell us exactly what you think here, then.
I think she's over her head. I think she was the wrong pick. And my hope was that, I know that it's improbable. I know all about the conventional wisdom and how these things backfire on a candidate, how it would be suicidal for John McCain. I mean, that's the assumption based on precedent. But I suggest that circumstances are different. We're in a crisis in this country, and we need cool heads and experienced, wise people. So my thought was, well, why not? You know, why not? It's the fiction writer's question. Why not? Why not try this? Let her go home. let her bail before the debate because, frankly, everything's been so painful thus far, I'm not sure I could make it through it. But then let's just say,
you mean seriously, literally announce that she's pulling out of the debate? You wrote John McCain can't ask her to. That would be political suicide, but she could do it herself.
Yeah, but this is all, I'm a columnist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not running anybody's campaign here, and people can choose to ignore it or not read it. But my thinking was simply that if we could bring in someone like Mitt Romney, who does know the marketplace and finance and all of that, could help McCain develop a strategy for talking about these issues and trying to head us in the right direction. I thought, you know, would voters maybe forgive him of making a poor judgment and vote for him? My sense is that a lot of people would.
Kathleen, let me ask you. Maybe you just never liked the cut of her jib. Maybe you're one of those Georgetown cocktail party people John McCain was talking. But seriously, what was your first reaction?
Now, you know that's not true if you've read my columns.
Yeah, I do.
I think I wrote five.
Yes.
Praising her jib. I liked her jib a lot. I thought Sarah Palin was great. And I still think Sarah Palin is great, by the way. This is not personal. Unfortunately, she's not running just for vice president, but also for president. That's why she's being vetted now so intensely. Too bad she wasn't vetted before so intensely. No McCain people were in Alaska asking questions about Sarah Palin. The media are doing all that work now. It's too bad it wasn't done beforehand. But I thought we all love her narrative. Her story is great. She is a self-made woman. She's done the family career balancing act that all of us aspire to accomplish. She does have a record of challenging the establishment. We love all that. But she's simply not ready. You know, Barack Obama came out in 2004. That was his introduction to the country.
Mm.
And he's had 4 years to get his act together. It's just too bad that Sarah Palin wasn't given that same opportunity. Instead, she was, I think, plucked before her time. And I hope it doesn't have caused her lasting problems. I'd like to see her stay on the stage. I think she's got a lot to offer.
Mona Charon, speak to Kathleen Parker's view on this.
Hi, Mona.
Hi, Kathleen. nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it was nice to have somebody saying something nice to Kathleen here.
A lot of people have said nice things. A lot of people that would surprise you, frankly.
Yeah, no, I'm joking. But Mona, Kathleen says, look around. These are serious times. And her calm, cool, collected bottom line is, not ready. The tagline on, McCain campaign ads about Barack Obama, and more than not ready, but should go. It's a little late to bail out before the debate. They're tonight.
Yeah.
But what do you say, Mona?
I understand everything Kathleen has said, and it's understandable why she came to the conclusion she did and said what she said. On the other hand, I think even when you wrote it, Kathleen, it was already too late. If it had been during the time he was considering her, you know, don't do it, that would have been, you know, fine. But now it's way too late. I mean, there's no way that he could dump her, and even if she withdrew, it would still be seen as him dumping her. Everybody knows how those fictions go. I want to spend more time with my family sort of thing. No, it would be obvious that it was McCain who had dumped her. And then the Obama campaign would very rightly say, you want us to trust your judgment, you want us to trust your experience, and you didn't even have the judgment to pick a decent vice president. You admit it yourself because you dumped her. And so that would have been a devastating blow. And no, it's just not realistic. He's far better off, you know, prepping her as best he can, hoping that she will rely upon her lots of natural resources, which you agree she does have, her natural abilities, and that she will be able to come through in a pinch. I think that's the only reasonable course for the McCain campaign to take.
So it's a political calculation, but Mona, you're pretty clear-eyed as a VP or potential, you know, chief head of state of this country, which anything can happen. The readiness facts matter. Are you prepared to say that she's not just good and necessary political partner at this point, but ready for that office, which is what American voters decide?
That question is very hard to answer because on the one hand, I would love to see somebody who was more fluent and more confidence-inspiring in others. At the same time, I cannot discount the fact that she has good, solid instincts about things, domestically and internationally, that she has a very sort of firm idea that the United States is a force for good in the world, that the United States needs to support its allies and oppose its foes. And I think that those kinds of basic world views are valuable and not necessarily to be found in abundance in other candidates, including the two who are running on the Democratic ticket.
Kathleen, I know we've just got you for a couple more minutes. Then do the math. Sarah Palin's instincts, the cut of her jib, what you liked versus what you've seen in the last month, and walk us through just one more time how you came to the opposite and kind of radical conclusion.
Well, I like Sarah Palin's instincts, but I think we've had some experience with leadership that relies only on instinct. That's good, but it's not enough. And at the same time, experience is not enough. You have to have a combination of qualities to have the kind of confidence that people need, I think, in order to see Sarah Palin not only as vice president, but as heartbeat away. And I love this George Will quote in one of his recent columns, and he was actually talking about McCain's pick of Palin and saying that it was a visceral judgment. And but he said, the viscera are not the seat of wisdom. And I have to say I agree with that.
Enough with the gut, maybe. Kathleen Parker, syndicated columnist for Tribune Newspapers. Thank you very much for being with
us. Let me correct you before I go.
Yes.
I don't think Tribune claims me anymore.
Oh, is it?
I switched to the Washington Post.
The Washington Post group. Of course.
Whereupon Tribune probably relieved me of all other associations.
Okay. Duly noted.
All right, thank you so much.
Stay safe, and thank you very much for being with us.
Great talking to you. Good talking to you, Mona.
Bye, Kathleen.
Bye-bye.
Let's turn to our listeners. Rick in Wethersfield, Connecticut. Rick, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I was a McCain supporter, and I will not be voting for John McCain. His choice of Sarah Palin as vice president is absolutely, it's absurd. It's frightening. I mean, I couldn't even sleep last night. I mean, he says country first, but it was a visceral reaction, I think. He just went with the gut. He threw the dice, and he came up with the snake eyes. I mean, she's a liar.
What do you mean by a liar?
She says she was against the Bridge to Nowhere. And she killed the Bridge to Nowhere. She repeats these lies. Transcripts and videos says she was for the bridge when she was governor. She acquiesced to the Congress after they had killed it. They killed it first.
Well, she changed her position on it. That's clear. But, Rick, maybe you're out of touch with something. Big crowds turn out for Sarah Palin and really roar for her.
Well, people, big crowds turned out for Tiny Tim. It's irrelevant. Look,
I'm surprised that the caller is so exercised about that part of her background. I mean, that I was expecting him to say something else. I mean, if somebody being untruthful is really what gets you so exercised that you can't vote for John McCain, what about the untruthfulness that Joe Biden has been convicted of over the years many times? Plagiarism in law school, plagiarism on the campaign trail. Lying about his own background.
How about it, Rick? How about Joe Biden? Go back to the late 80s and he had the plagiarism charge against him in campaign speeches?
I really can't speak to that. I didn't research that. I'm somebody that does my research, and I just researched this woman, and she had lie after lie. She said she began a $40 billion natural gas pipeline. She began nothing. Nothing began.
You say this woman, some listeners, women maybe, are going to hear that, Rick, and say, you just don't want a woman in there.
No, absolutely not. I love women, and I think they're some of the best and brightest people in the world are women. There's research chemists, there's biologists. No, absolutely not. Women have, I think, better instincts than men, usually. But this is just a poor choice. She said also there was a violation of U.S. airspace.
Well, she said something about Vladimir Putin floating into U.S. airspace,
But in 21 months, there was no violation of airspace.
Well, I think it was kind of metaphorical or surreal or something. Rick, thank you very much for your call. Steve Braun, you see the impression caller Rick is getting of Sarah Palin. If he were to sit down with Alaskans, who you've been with recently, what do you think they'd say to him on this line of criticism?
Well, I think lately her popularity among Alaskans has begun to plummet. But when she was elected, she was a real bright star.
It must be very lately because it was 80% popularity.
The recent polls have shown it beginning to plummet. I mean, not drastically, but somewhat. Initially she came across as a real breath of fresh air in Alaska. Largely because of her image as a reformer, which has taken some hits with the Troopergate situation in Alaska. Alaskans are very independent, and they don't like to be told what to do, largely. They really identified with her. They saw her as a self-made woman who came to the fore. She wouldn't tolerate even some of the Republican bigwigs out there who were who she accused of malfeasance. So she was pretty tough, and they appreciated that.
Let's take a call from DePoister, New York, and Sheila. Sheila, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I'm a registered Republican, and I admit I was disappointed when she was picked, because to me she's just George Bush all over again, very socially conservative, is portrayed as an everyday person, the charm and charisma, somebody you'd want to hang around with, has disdain for the press. Everything is the press's fault. None of it's true. It's just the press being mean to me, while at the same time condemning when people on the Democratic side say the same thing. And I, being a stay-at-home mom myself in a very rural part of New York, I'm not just a one-issue person. I'm not just a social conservative. I look at everything. And she just makes me nervous because in her I see, of course she's drawing big crowds from the base, so did George Bush. And I feel offended if I express that opinion that somehow I'm not a good American and I'm not a good Republican because I won't walk in lockstep with the social conservatives on their issues. And just one more thing, the response when you criticize conservative Republicans is pretty much the same as your guests did. They deflect it to what the other side did.
Well,
why don't we explain, our side and correct our house's mess and not always deflect, well, look what those other people
did. Fair enough, but it is a contest here. I mean, both sides can take their scrutiny, I'm sure. Mona Charon, what do you think? What do you say to Sheila's perspective?
I think that there's no doubt that her very forthright positions in two ways made her uniquely suited to be McCain's running mate. One was her anti-corruption history that Steve outlined, which tied in so nicely with McCain's self-perception and
self-presentation
as a reformer, especially in a bad year for Republicans. Both of them took on their own party, and then they can sort of say to the others, did you ever take on the Democratic Party? Well, no. Okay, so that was strong. And then her very strong pro-life stance made her extremely attractive to the before now very listless Republican base who, were willing to go along with McCain but were never really excited about him. So she performed those two functions and very successfully so. And she had a gritty, wonderful, charming personality to go along with it. Now she's flubbed a number of interviews really badly, and caused a lot of people to begin to worry. And so I think the stakes could not be higher for this debate tonight. She can either turn it around and make people breathe a sigh of relief and say, well, those were just a couple of bad interviews, and after all, she does have what it takes, or their perception is going to be reinforced. And as much as I personally would love to see her shine and do well tonight, I'm very nervous, I'll admit it.
A lot on the line here, Steve. Yep.
Yeah, I was just going to add one other thing. Part of, the problem that she's had isn't necessarily her own. It's also, it can be traced to the McCain campaign. They made a tactical decision very early on to keep her at arm's length from the press, from the public, from, and they've parceled her out.
Right, and when the windows opened briefly, it was tough. Steve, we've got to take a break here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Alaska Governor Sarah Palin on debate day, 1 month into her national political career. What we've seen and heard so far from Governor Palin, of Alaska. Here she was in her first major TV network interview, Sarah Palin asked by ABC's Charles Gibson about how she felt when John McCain asked her to serve.
I didn't hesitate. No,
doesn't that take some hubris?
I answered him yes, because I have the confidence in that readiness and knowing that you can't blink. You have to be wired in a way of being so committed to the mission that we're on, reform of this country and victory in the war. You can't blink. So I didn't blink then, even when asked to run as his running mate.
You can't blink, said Sarah Palin. It's got rougher since then. Didn't go well at all with Katie Couric. And by last weekend, Saturday Night Live's Amy Poehler playing Katie Couric was pressing Tina Fey playing Sarah Palin for one lesson here that she's learned from Iraq.
Katie, I'd like to use one of my lifelines. I'm sorry? I want to phone a friend. You don't have any lifelines. Well, in that case, I'm just gonna have to get back to you.
Okay, Tina Fey, Saturday Night Live, having a little fun, but it's serious business out there. We're joined by conservative columnist Mona Charon from Great Falls, Virginia, this hour, by Steve Braun, national political reporter for the Los Angeles Times, and right now from Roslyn, Virginia, by Ken Vogel, senior reporter for Politico.com. He spent a good part of the last month on the hustings with Governor Palin in New York, Philadelphia, Orlando, and up in Wasilla, Alaska. Ken Vogel, thanks very much for being here.
Hey, great to be with you, Tom.
We've seen the interactions on TV. What about on the stump? They haven't been unlimited. I think 17 or 18 times she's been out, a lot of time with John McCain. But what's the reaction that she's getting on the stump on the campaign trail, Ken?
Well, as you alluded to earlier, it's been overwhelmingly enthusiastic. In fact, when John McCain appears alone, he doesn't draw anywhere near the crowds that he does when either she appears with him or she appears by herself. So that's the good. Obviously, you've been discussing kind of the bad. But what's really puzzling is that the McCain campaign, the way the McCain campaign has handled her, has not even really taken advantage of the good. She, as you mentioned, has only had 17 sort of large, events open to the general public, rallies, town halls, all but five of them have been with Senator McCain. So they're not even really taking advantage of her ability to draw large crowds and fire up the base. Instead, they're, you know, largely withholding her both from the media on the campaign trail as well as from major media interviews. Of course, we've seen the results when there have been interviews with national media that haven't gone particularly well. And then also keeping her off the campaign trail. So it's really puzzling sort of the strategy that they're using. It seems like they're having difficulty kind of coming up with a good way to use her.
Ken, what about her impact in the polls? It was very positive right after the Republican convention. What's happened in the subsequent month?
Well, it hasn't been very, but it's gotten progressively worse, kind of like her major media interviews. There was a Washington Post ABC News poll released this morning that found 60% of respondents see her as lacking the experience to be an effective president. Now, she did marginally better just earlier this month and had done significantly better, actually, when she was first announced. So there's kind of two questions here. And the one is actual readiness to be president. I don't think you could argue that too many folks who haven't actually been president are ready to be president. But then there's the public perception issue. And the public perception of her readiness has gone down significantly as she has gotten more exposure through this really kind of puzzling strategy of the McCain campaign to selectively put her out there. I think if they were to have just thrown her out there initially, let her, make some stumbles in her interviews with the press, let her face off with the reporters following her campaign, then she would kind of inoculate herself a little bit, not necessarily to the level that Joe Biden has, where he can make a really kind of puzzling gaffe and get a free pass for it. But certainly there would not be as much scrutiny on her every utterance as there is now, and the stakes in this debate would not be nearly as high.
Steve Braun, we read that the Palin camp is prepping her to go very hard at Joe Biden in the debate tonight, to be very aggressive with him, maybe to get things back on her turf, maybe to get the dynamic working her way.
That could well be. The problem that Biden faces, it's almost two-pronged. I mean, on the one hand, he can't come back at her too aggressive and too angry, because it raises essentially the public empathy for her, and we saw that a little bit in Alaska as well, when Tony Knowles, the former governor of Alaska, and Andrew Halcrow, the independent candidate in the governor's race, sort of tried to double team her, and in the end she ended up doing quite well. On the other hand, he can't be too courtly or, condescending, if you will, because, again, it could develop a backlash against him, too. So he has a very narrow tunnel in which to operate here. That's why you hear talk that he's going to make sure he always refers to her as Governor Palin, not Sarah. Obviously, he's going to have to be very careful not to go on too long himself.
Mona, what would you advise for Sarah Palin tonight?
I would advise her to think about her task as one that is intimately connected with the task of the McCain campaign at this stage, which is to remind viewers that this is the most liberal Democratic nominee maybe ever, and to have handy and at her fingertips a number of examples of how liberal both Barack Obama and Joe Biden, but specifically Barack Obama, is. Any time she can drive home that point is time well spent.
Let's hear just a little more from the side-by-side. We'll hear it tonight live from St. Louis, but here again, Katie Couric talking with each candidate. Here's talking to Governor Palin, and then Biden asking about the importance of the separation of church and state in American life.
Thomas Jefferson wrote about the First Amendment, building a wall of separation between church and state. Why do you think that's so important?
His intention in expressing that was so that government did not mandate a religion on the people. And Thomas Jefferson also said, never underestimate the wisdom of the people. And the wisdom of the people, I think, in this issue is that people have the right and the ability and the desire to express their own religious views, be it on a very personal level, which is where I choose to express my faith, or in a more public forum. And the wisdom of the people, thankfully ingrained in the foundation of our country, is so extremely important. And Thomas Jefferson wanted to protect that.
The best way to look at it is look at every state where that wall is not built. Look at every country in the world where religion is able to impact on the governance. Almost every one of those countries, there's real turmoil. Look, the founders were pretty smart. They had gone through, several hundred years of wars, religious wars. They were in the midst of religious wars in Europe. And they figured it out. The best way to do this is keep the government out of religion. They took religion out of government, but they didn't mean religion couldn't be in the public place, in the public square.
Senator Joe Biden and Governor Sarah Palin responding to their, again, to a question from Katie Couric on CBS News. Let's hear from our listeners. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Trent, you're on the air. Trent, what do you think?
Hello, Tom. I just think it almost seems to me that a lot of the McCain supporters are being very hard on Sarah Palin, and I, for one, think that Sarah was a great choice as a vice president for McCain. I believe that, you know, if you look at the presidency in past years, that the vice president is supposed to be your equal, yet your opposite. And I think she offers a lot to the McCain campaign that McCain doesn't, as far as McCain is a very eloquent speaker when he does speak, but he's not very charismatic. And I believe that Sarah offers that to his campaign, and she also offers a very raw talent to his campaign, and I don't understand why people are being so hard on her.
McCain would be the oldest president ever to take office if he's elected, Trent. He's had skin cancer, bouts of four times. If, and no one would wish it, but if, John McCain, was not available to serve, would you feel comfortable with Sarah Palin stepping into those shoes a year from now, 2 years from now, 6 months from now, with that charisma and raw talent, as you put it?
Yes, I believe I would. I mean, of course, I have my reservations as far as her experience, and I think everybody does. But I don't think that would hinder her in any way because of the strength of the McCain campaign itself, and the strength of the people that surround him. McCain has a lot of experience and can make a lot of decisions himself, but he also relies on his economic advisors and many of his other advisors that he's appointed to his campaign, and I believe that that they would help groom Sarah into the president that she could be if they just give her a chance.
Trent, thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom,
yes, Mona, please.
If I may, I think that the way you framed that question is interesting because you said in 18 months, a year, you know, if God forbid she had to take office, I think that time period is crucial. There are some people who are sort of worried if, suppose something happened to him on January 21st, that would be worrisome. A year later, 2 years later, much less so. By then, she will have had the experience of being vice president, of sitting in the cabinet room, listening to every meeting, of being briefed every morning by the security people. It would be a far, far different situation a year from now or a year from then.
And enough, you think, Mona, given what you've seen of her so far, her instincts?
I think that, yes, as I said, I think her instincts are sound, and I think she's bright, and by all accounts, a quick study. Again, we'll see evidence of that tonight, I hope. And so, yes, with that kind of experience under her belt, she would probably be ready. That much having been said, let's not forget that John McCain's mother is 96, and McCain probably has good more years left in him.
Lucky him. I hope they're good genes. But a lot on faith there. Let's get a call from Des Moines, Iowa, and David. David, looks like you're a big rig driver on the road maybe there. What do you think?
Well, actually, I'm quite impressed with her. I mean, compared to the fact of the media trying to tear her up, put her down, and they literally give Senator Obama a bye on just about every issue that they would probably come in and really give her a hard time on, such as the Reverend, and the fact that he said, what, he visited 58 states. I mean, I really think that they've tried to, tear her down, tear her up, and take the American people and kind of make them feel they shouldn't have any confidence in her.
Of course, we remember back in the spring, David, when Barack Obama was having trouble with his pastor in Chicago. We saw an awful lot of that pastor on television, on the radio. We heard an awful lot from him.
Well, yeah, but I've never heard anybody say anything to him about heirs. Or, you know, why he decided to announce that he was going to run for president from his home. I mean, I've never heard anything like that.
His associations in Chicago. David, thanks for your call. Ken Vogel, what about the charge that the media has been out to give Barack Obama a pass and tear up, as our caller David says, Sarah Palin?
Barack Obama definitely had a bit of a honeymoon, from 2004 and his acclaimed Democratic convention speech through his election later that year, and even through maybe the early part of his presidential campaign. He was new, he was exciting on the scene. It was a sort of a good story, but I don't think that can be said any longer. We've written extensively about Bill Ayers, this former 60s radical that the caller referred to, about Jeremiah Wright. I wrote about his answers on a 1996 questionnaire when he was running for state senate. It indicated that he would support the banning the sale, possession, and manufacture even of firearms. His campaign said that, in fact, a staffer filled that out. We've delved deeply into his background. He's gotten a fair amount of scrutiny. The issue here is that Sarah Palin catapulted from, relative obscurity to the national scene, and there were, 2 months, 3 months to really vet her, and I think it's the media's responsibility to do so. You don't want to elect someone where voters feel like they haven't really been able to explore her background, her beliefs, what she would do as president, what she's done in her past career in public life. So I don't think that that the scrutiny is unfair. Now it can be argued that perhaps the tone of it, that there are questions being raised about her that might not be raised about a male candidate, but I mean, I followed Hillary Clinton for several months on the trail, and I can tell you that she faced a lot of these same questions, and she responded actually in somewhat of a similar way, alleging that the media treatment of her was sexist, or at least her handlers did. That caught on a little bit, but it's really catching on with Sarah. Sarah Palin. So to that extent, I think it's an effective strategy by the McCain campaign to sort of attack the messenger here.
Let's get one more. Yeah, yeah, Mona, please. Yeah.
Sorry, Tom. I think actually that this is not sexism on the part of the media in their questioning of Sarah Palin. But at the beginning, it was snobbery. There was a visceral reaction on the part of the mainstream media to her selection that was extremely negative, and reverberated for several days with all of these rumors flying about her on the web and so on, and things being said.
But why do you say snobbery, Mona? I mean, she was a quite recently elected governor from a state with 600,000 or 700,000 people.
Yes, all that is true, but there was a tone of hysteria in the reaction to her that went way beyond any of those facts. I wrote a column suggesting that what really set people off about her was that she was so strongly pro-life and small town and so on, which didn't go down well with the major media. And by the way, she is still benefiting from that initial reaction, because now...
In other words, the backlash to it.
Yes, mm-hmm. I mean, that's right. And so now, when they're hearing more criticism based on some realistic problems that Palin is having, there's still a lot of sentiment out there that says, well, the press are just out to get her.
Steve Braun, what do you think of the debates tonight as a forum for undecided voters? And I see independents shifting against Palin in the recent polls here, but for undecided voters, is this the place to sort Sarah Palin out? If it's not in the columns of your paper, or if they haven't done it with Katie Couric, will this tightly formatted debate format be the way?
Well, I don't think it's going to matter much if you've already gotten an opinion, and the debate largely reinforces that. The bar for her is really, really high, and she has to turn around and show that she's able to do things that she hasn't shown that she's been able to do up to now. That's the problem that she's got.
Well, the whole world will be watching Steve Braun with the LA Times. Thank you very much for being with us, Steve.
Thank you.
Ken Vogel with Politico.com. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Mona Charon, syndicated columnist, author of Do-Gooders, How Liberals Hurt Those They Claim to Help. Mona, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.